What if this isn't a climate crisis, but the greatest opportunity humanity has had in a long time? Lean Into Clean will explore and discuss with highly esteemed guests on what could be the new spirals for society, sustainability, spirituality, and social harmony. Perhaps we've all lost our way. Lean Into Clean will showcase how we might remember, refocus and restore the natural ways so we can again live in balance and harmony with life on Earth and all its inhabitants. Welcome to this week's Lean Into Clean. I'm Jarvis Smith. This is UK Health Radio. It's the 8th of September. All the kids went back to school this week. I hope you've managed to move from the summertime into this kind of time of getting closer to autumn and moving into winter. There definitely has been a shift in the weather. I'm not going to go on about it, but it does feel a bit colder than it has been certainly for the last couple of weeks. Myself and family went to Uganda. We went on a absolutely monumental, gigantic trip. We were in Africa for a month. It was the most amazing experience. I don't know if anyone out there has ever been on safari, but Uganda has really some of the best that safaris can offer. Beautiful, beautiful national parks, well-protected animals. It was a really, really wonderful time. There was one moment I have to share with you. I was with my daughter, who's 9, and my son, who's 4, and another family with their children. We pulled over the wagon. We pulled out some tables. We put some tablecloths on, and we had lunch surrounded by giraffes and buffalo. And it was just them, and elephants, actually. It was the most wild and extraordinary experience. I really felt like I'd gone to some part of heaven. If you do believe that there are other worlds and dimensions, it certainly felt like that to me. And then, you know, coming back to England, which I love, and I live in North Yorkshire, it's fantastic, but it really felt like I'd kind of come back down with a bit of a slump. But there we are. So I hope you all had a wonderful summer. Do please email into us or message in and let us know what you're up to and whether there were any extraordinary experiences. So I'm going to get on with some news before we invite our first guest of this new season. She's been wonderful, actually, because we actually only met this morning on another podcast that I was doing. And another guest that I had scheduled, unfortunately, couldn't make it just due to some personal reasons. So at the last minute, my guest today stepped in. And I tell you what, she's absolutely wonderful. We're going to have an awesome conversation. I was really thrilled and inspired by speaking to her earlier. So we're going to continue some of that today, and you will get to know her too. But before we do that, as you know, my company, my wife and I, Katie, who's the editor-in-chief, we publish a magazine called My Green Pod, and there is an online website called mygreenpod.com. It actually has over 6,000 articles. We put a new piece of content onto the website every day since we launched in 2013, and there's also about 40 magazines on there as well. So if you want to find out more about how to be sustainable, along with 10 million other readers, because that's how many people we reach now through print and digital, then go to mygreenpod.com. Type into the search engine anything you like, because I guarantee we've got some information on how to be more sustainable in that particular area of your life, whether it's food, travel, cars, money, you know, the list goes on and on and on and on. Even how to travel to beautiful places and do it as sustainably as possible. So I'll tell you more about that another day, because I don't want to waste time today. But I've got a bit of perhaps not such exciting news. This is one of the features that went up on the website just this week on September the 5th. Now, the headline is, and brace yourself for this, Earth Reaches Plastic Overshoot Day. Now, many of you may know that we do have a Earth Overshoot Day. And what that day is, it's when we've used up the whole of the year's resources before the end of the year. And I think if I remember rightly, this year we'd used up the Earth's resources by August, which means September, November, December, January are all deficit months. I mean, that's awful, right? But this is Plastic Overshoot Day, so this is obviously all about plastic. The landmark date reveals the moment humanity can no longer properly manage its annual plastic waste. So essentially, all the plastic that's being used on the planet, we can't actually do anything with the amounts because we just don't have the capability to do so. Now, a little bit of good news here. There are some amazing technologies, clean techs coming into play. I'm working with an organization right now called Eden Energy that actually can turn all the world's waste back into other commodities, including fuel. So look out for that. Eden Energy, big shout out to you guys. So let me just read you a little bit about this article. So this was on September the 5th. It marked the global. Sorry, the annual Global Plastic Overshoot Day, when humanity's plastic waste surpasses the world's capacity to manage it. In 2025, that tipping point comes with 225 million tons of plastic waste set to be generated, equivalent to the weight of, check this, 50 million adult elephants. Now, that was true to my heart, having seen an abundance of elephants last week, including baby ones in the Ugandan national parks. So this amount is an increase of 5 million tons or 1 million elephants of waste since 2024. Now, these are catastrophic figures, but I know many of you out there that are listening, you do as much as you possibly can to minimize your waste. So please do continue to do that. I just want to tell you a little bit more. On average, 28 kilograms of plastic waste per person will be generated globally this year. It's a 9.7% increase since 2021. Which is appalling. Almost a third, 31.9%, will be mismanaged at the end of its life, resulting in 72 million tons of plastic in nature. Now, what happens to that plastic? We all know it goes to the seas, it goes into the earth, it goes into animals. You know, seagulls have been cut open with plastic waste in their tummies, fish, the whole thing. There was a study done a couple of years ago in America. They studied 200,000 humans, and every single one of us has plastic in our systems. That's how bad a system it's got. So, what can we do about it? Well, I mean, first of all, you can manage the plastic use at your home. Make sure you only buy, if you are going to buy plastic, make sure you buy plastic that can be recycled so it can go into your recycling bin. There are some plastics that still can't to this day be recycled. So that's things like, let me think of a common one, cling film, perhaps. There are alternatives, so please do look out for the alternatives. So, you know, I think the thing to do is, you know, we do need plastic in the world. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Why? Because actually, it's one of the cheapest, cost-efficient ways to ship stuff. So, for example, health, medical care, that often has to be plastic because it's light and cost effective to ship, things like that. The big problem is when people don't recycle it properly. Now, in England, we're pretty good, I have to admit. It's when you go to countries like, I don't know, Indonesia, the Philippines, you know, India, places like that, where unfortunately they don't have such robust recycling plants. So, you know, do consider how you use plastic in your own home. Do consider whether you can reduce it. There's some wonderful, wonderful, wonderful content on mygreenpod.com about how you can actually become more plastic efficient in your life. And there's some wonderful stories of humans and individuals and children and all kinds of people that are doing great things. If you use Strava, there's a great app on there that when you're out running or when you're out cycling, you can actually pick pick up plastic and waste on your journey, and then you can be accounted for, which is a really beautiful thing. It's a bit gamified. That's run by somebody who won the People Environment Achievement Awards this year. So, just a little shout out for that. But anyway, do what you can. That's my little soapbox moment for today. I'm going to now introduce you to today's guest. Now, today's guest, as I said, is a wonderful human being. I mean, that's all we have on this show is wonderful human beings. I'm just going to read out to you what Louise Romaine says about herself on a website. She says that she is a UK-based sound artist and a documentarist, born in France and an earthling at heart. I love that. Let's find out more about what being an earthling is about. She trained as an anthropologist in Berlin, Copenhagen and Montreal, and also identifies as an imagination activist. Welcome to the show, Louise.
Hi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. It really, really is. Just tell me about an earthling. What is an earthling?
An earthling, I love this term, which probably has references in other fields and areas that I'm not necessarily connected to, but the meaning it has for me is really reclaiming a sense of belonging to this planet. And remembering that we are part of this web of life. I think there is also maybe a political dimension in seeing human identity beyond borders, especially the borders of nation states,
Yep.
which, I think in the UK and many other parts of the world, there is heated debates and conflicts around migration. And yet, migration is the human story. We wouldn't be who we are without
It's
migration.
so true.
Right, so
Yep.
I think Earthling is both this connecting with like the spiritual dimension, but also politically.
I love it. I love it. Thank you. I mean, what I pick up from that is it's something very similar that I use in my world is that often we are labeled or identified either as a Brit or a African or Ugandan, whatever it might be, right? So that's number one labeling. But the biggest sense of labelism that gets us tied into this thing we call economics or capitalism is being a consumer. I hear this all the time, and I'm constantly challenging it, saying, hold on a minute, we're human beings that buy stuff, but it doesn't mean that we're consumers. I mean, the word consumer has consume in it, and to consume something means you use it all up until it's gone. So it's definitely a label theory that I'm not attached to. But I love the earthling. That's fantastic. Earthling stewards, I love it. Let's get a campaign going between us around that. I was looking at your website earlier, and by the way, it's really beautiful. Louise has a website called tuneintotheworld.com. So if you're inspired, and I will shout that out again, but there's a little bit on it. It says, my invitation to you. It says, dream deeper into thriving futures where humans remember their place and responsibility. Oh, sorry, where humans, sorry, excuse me. Let me do that again. Dream deeper into thriving futures where humans remember their place and responsibility in the circle of life. There's lots of connections to Africa in what we're doing at the moment. I don't know why, but I immediately think of that Lion King song, The Circle of Life. Louise, just tell me a little bit more about that. Dream deeper into thriving futures where humans remember their place and responsibility in the circle of life. What do you mean by that?
So this connects a little bit with what you named in my intro as being an imagination activist. For some time now, I've been working with the organization called Moral Imaginations, founded by Phoebe Tickell in the UK. And a lot of the movement that she's building around imagination activism is actually reclaiming or right and a responsibility to imagine better futures, to go outside of the doom and gloom narrative and the collapse and the different pressures that we are feeling, and dare to dream, dare to imagine that we can thrive together, that is human beings across the various humans that we can be, and also together with other species and ecosystems. So and this thing about the circle of life, so my show, the name of my production is called Circle of Voices. And it's very much about bringing together earth voices, voices from the living world, non-human beings, rivers, birds, corals together with human stewards and guardians of these ecosystems. And so there is something also really powerful I find in the image and the symbolism of the circle. I think in our societies we are taught that life is very much of a linear process. In many other traditional and ancestral cultures, everything is circular, life and death and life and death, right? So, and there is a humility, I think, that comes from understanding the world like that.
I agree. I agree. And I think you've said it beautifully and eloquently. Thank you very, very much for that. I 100% agree. Often in business, which seems to be the kind of the area that I'm invited to speak up most. Often people use this terminology of pillars and and linear lines, and I say absolutely not. This has to be about spirals. It's about the integration of these different things you're calling pillars. Actually, so no, love that, love that. Let's just talk about a little, because I want to come to you about the circles of voices, and actually we've got some of your content to play today. I won't call it music because I know I've done that before, and you've actually said, well, it maybe it's, so we'll call it content for now, and you can explain exactly what it is. But let's just talk about the indigenous side of things for a minute, because I know you're deeply connected to the wisdom of the indigenous peoples, and you have networks, and this organization in the UK that you've spoken about sounds very connected to that wisdom. I use this phrase, Louise, and I'm interested to hear what you say. I use this phrase often enough, I'm doing talks, that we are all indigenous to planet Earth. Every single human being on the planet is indigenous. The problem is that we've forgotten our indigenous ways because we've been born into a system that has, deliberately or not, stripped us away from our sacredness, the connection to the sacred, the connection to nature. That's number one. And then the second part is that the consumer thing keeps us completely detached from nature, because when we buy something, we forget that every single thing that we buy, everything, whether it's a service industry, a business, a commodity, a product, a food, a car, a cell phone, whatever it is, it all comes from nature. Every single thing. So what do you think about my we're all indigenous? The problem is we've forgotten our connection. Does that make sense?
Yes, I think it's beautiful. I think it will resonate differently depending on the context where indigeneity is very politicized. So I work a bit in Canada, and I think if you say that in Canada, you'll get some serious backlash because there are people who are claiming indigeneity as part of their ancestry, and that isn't actually quite right. So there is, I think it really depends on the legal and political systems that's attached to indigenous rights. In the UK, I think there is a beautiful movement reclaiming a sense of connection with the earth, learning about ancestral practices and ways, where it's like the seasonal festivals of the year and the solstice, the equinox being the main ones. And so, yes, and the other point for me is actually, I think it's really important to use language that people can relate to. I still think that indigenous is quite an academic term. Unless you're evolving in these spaces and have these interests, it's still not something that people can maybe fully relate to. So another sentence that I hear quite a lot is we are nature. And that's like so straightforward. You can't really overcomplicate that. And for it to drop into our bodies beyond the kind of like logistical understanding of it, that's another process, right, that we can talk about.
No, I love it. I love it. And actually, let's go a little bit deeper on that. We are nature. Before we do that, it's that time of the show where we need to go to the commercial break. They're much less commercial than any other commerce that you get out in the world. So do hang around. We'll very quickly flip to a commercial break. We shall be back shortly to speak to Louise, and we're going to look at and just kind of explore being nature. We are nature. So I'll see you back here in just a few moments.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, welcome back. I'm here with Louise Romaine, who is a lots of things, but really, I would say an expert in human living, human being. But she uses sound and artistry and documentaries to really exemplify her way of showing up in the world. Louise, we were just talking about that phrase, and I love this phrase: "We are nature." Just for you, what does that phrase mean, and why do you feel it's an important phrase for us to use in modern times?
Maybe because I think at the core of it, what we need to dismantle with the toxic pressure of modernity is this illusion of separation between human and nature. And that has been around for a few centuries now, and that is really coming to our disservice in how we can create good conditions, good being conditions for future generations and other forms of life to be on this earth. So there is something very, very simple about remembering that our health depends on the health of our ecosystem and vice versa. Like, you need clean water, you need healthy soil in order to have a good life. And I don't know if I'm going to throw like a big element in the mix there, but like something that I'm very curious about is the rise of cancer cases, just talking about my community, for example. So the way that I perceive that is, systemically, the earth is becoming quite sick and is becoming quite saturated with a lot of the pollutants, destruction, and different kind of like really extractive and harmful processes that we are putting onto Earth. So somehow for me there is a bit of a backlash, and we are kind of realizing that we are completely codependent. Same thing with the pandemic. It's happened because of encroachment on wild habitats. So it's kind of like, without going into debates and big factual information, and it's like we are nature is such a it is such a tagline that really encapsulates that.
I love it. I really love it. It's simple, it's to the point. Tell me, in your life, and I bet there's probably been many, but a significant moment in your life when you knew you were nature, you knew there was no disconnection. And just talk me through that moment.
Well, there is one moment that's coming to mind. I don't know if it's like, I guess I am very rebellious, and so I'm quite tempted to talk about it, but maybe it's not quite so good for public broadcast.
You can say what you like here, as long as there's no blasphemy or, this is a that's the beauty of independent stations, right? We're able to say what we can, what we're allowed, not what we're allowed to say. We're able to say what we want to say. Go for it.
Wonderful. So I think for me it was psychedelics, actually. Taking psychedelics was a way to completely.
Psilocybin, ayahuasca or
Actually, LSD.
LSD.
Yeah.
Great. Love it.
W was a way to really transcend my physical limitations and merge into this greater oneness. And that was as simple as observing a snail or a spider weave its web and being completely transcended by this being doing its thing, and all of the human life going around it and everything. And I think probably, and it's a bit hard to explain, right? Like, what is the transition that happened in psychedelics? But for me, that was the thing where I was really like, wow, this world is so much bigger. And then I think through traveling as well, like, meeting great water bodies like the Amazon River or the Athabasca River in Canada, and being with mountains or being in the jungle and just like feeling the greatness. And it's funny because when you were sharing your story earlier about the park in Uganda, I had the chance to go to the Galapagos in Ecuador and to a national park in Ecuador as well, which is part of the Amazon region. And it was the first instance, that was 2022, where I really felt like I was entering animal territory. I was a guest as a human in this territory where they
Agreed.
rule, and that's their sanctuary. So that was something really refreshing. And obviously, if you evolve in urban cities and environments, it's a lot harder to reach that. But I think it's kind of like once you've opened that door and gazed into it, into the oneness, then it's about staying sensitive to that connection.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And thank you for your honesty. I do appreciate that in our country, things like LSD and psilocybin and I mean are ridiculously banned. It's ridiculous. I just want to share a little moment with you just to really bounce and riff off what you've just said. I had my first psilocybin journey actually quite recently within the last 12 months. And I've been meditating every day and practicing yoga, for years. And, I trained with a female shaman in UK, but it was never plant medicine. It was always about listening and training to listen to the subtle frequencies of nature and life. And I remember kind of going into this psilocybin journey, and I began to see, like, inside my inner kind of eye, how I feel. So when I meditate and I feel and I go kind of broaden and widen and feel these amazing connections, I got to see them. It's like, whoa, it opened up the visual aspect of it. And I tell you what, it was absolutely beautiful. So no, thank you for bringing that. Anybody out there that is looking to, have these kind of journeys, find the right country, the right shamans or teachers or protectors, because there are many, many, many out there that can really support your heart-opening journey. So I would highly recommend it. Hope we're allowed to do that. Hope my producer doesn't tell me off for saying that.
Right.
Okay, Louise, I want to talk about you're really here to talk about the circles of voices. I just want to read a little bit out to you about what it says on Louise's website, which is tuneintotheworld.com. It says she produces the podcast Circle of Voices, and she releases immersive audio documentaries, short stories, and ecological sound art, crafted as invitations to dream deeper into thriving futures where humans remember their place and responsibility in the circle of life. But this is the bit I think is equally as interesting. She also covers UN biodiversity and ocean conferences as an independent reporter, often in partnerships with wider coalitions. Now, that's interesting because you're doing the practical and perhaps, the creative, which is, I think, the ultimate balance. Well done, you. It says here, Louise is passionate about bringing the sounds of the living world, eco stroke bioacoustics, to more ears and hearts and uplifting stories of resilience in times of collapse, crisis, and renewal. One of her long-term dreams is to support ecosystems regeneration by bridging together acoustic innovations with ancestral knowledge and localized grassroots action. So I want to take this moment just to say I am going to invite you to Bolivia, to the Amazon River, to the music concert that we're creating for nature. So we're going to have a chat about that offline, but we are actually doing that, and I really want you to come. So we're going to make that happen.
Very
Tell
good.
me about circles of voices. Tell me what is it? Why does it exist, and why is it important?
Thanks for this question. The seed of this idea of this production started. So, for some years, I worked in climate activism, specifically with the Stop Ecocide International movement and campaign.
Yep.
And
I
then.
know I knew Polly Higgins very well. She was a
Yes.
she's she was a P award winner twice, and a dear heart, and a reasonably good friend.
Yeah, amazing women, absolutely. And the campaign has made really great strides since her passing, and it's been amazing to be part of that movement. And then in 2022, when travel regulations eased up again, I felt like I really wanted to hit the road, and I've been traveling for a long time before that with the great privilege of a French passport and enough resources, so borders have never really been an issue for me, also being white. And I did this trip from east to west across Canada for 2 months, and then another couple of months in Brazil during the time of the national elections. And I was really seeking sounds and stories of resilience and resistance from people and places who have already experienced the end of the world, whether it is through slavery, genocide, extermination policies, and curious about what are some of the gems that I can harvest and then translate back to my people in the West and in different European cultures. And so that was kind of like the first cycle of my production. And then I went back again, year after year, kind of in this pattern of sitting at home, processing the stories, going back out and coming back home. And the latest production I created was with sounds from the Caribbean archipelago of San Andres, Providence, and Santa Catalina, which is connected to Colombia, where I got very passionate about learning that through recordings of healthy coral reefs, which happen underwater, and when they are being played in areas of damaged reefs or reefs that are struggling with health, these healthy sounds bring back the larvae of corals and fish just through the sounds of it. It's like the sounds of home. And so I got a hydrophone, which is an underwater microphone, and then decided to go out there and record the sounds of the reefs. Mix that with stories from Caribbean fishermen who became coral gardeners, and also with lived experiences from marine biologists from the Blue Indigo Foundation, which is a female-led, community-centered organization in that archipelago, and created this 50-minute-long documentary that people can listen online through my production, Circle of Voices, on many, SoundCloud, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and my website. And so I guess at the heart of it, the Circle of Voices idea is about how do you bring together these earth voices, these sounds from the living world, whether they are water sounds, sounds of the birds, frogs, like whatsoever, depending on the project, together with the stories from these stewards and these guardians, who often are indigenous peoples or definitely local communities. And then I put a really strong emphasis on women voices as well, because gender is a thing.
It
Still in
is.
2025, I'm a female producer, so obviously I will always want to amplify women's voices. And so then it's like it's this kind of weave of these different themes of resilience and resistance, and how do we nurture hope in times of great despair, when we feel like everything is collapsing and there is no future, right? So how do we look at cultures that's still surviving and that are actually learning to reinvent themselves somehow?
Beautiful, absolutely beautiful. I think this would be a really good moment. I mean, obviously, people can go to your show and hear the specific soundscape that you've talked about. But let's play something now that's something that you've created. We're not going to be able to play it all because it's a 12-minute piece, but we are going to play a piece that you've picked. So just tell us what we're going to play, and then after we've played it, you can tell me why you picked this particular version. So, what are we going to play?
So this is called an interspecies song, an ode to birds and waters. It features recordings from Colombia, the UK, and the Brazilian Amazon, as well as songs that were spoken during a pilgrimage around the Stonehenge court case, so that they were sung in London next to a spring. So it's like a weave between nature and activist voices.
Nice, lovely. Here we go. This is an ode to birds and waters.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, welcome back. So we've just had the privilege of listening to the Ode to Birds and Waters, which is absolutely beautiful. I was really taken somewhere listening to that. It was I hope our listeners out there equally were able to just stop and listen and be through that. But it's absolutely beautiful. Very, very well done. Tell us a little bit more about it, and why do you make these compositions in the way that you do?
I guess I'm really curious about exploring ways that listening to nature is supporting our mental and nerves, our mental health and nervous system. And there are some scientific studies which, have shown that listening to bird song specifically is very good for us. Ancestrally, very deep in our DNA, birds only sing when they are not threatened. So the connection for us is like it's relaxation, and I think it generates endorphins and maybe other good hormones in our bodies. So and in the same way, I'm curious, I need to look into it more, but like I'm sure that listening to the sound of flowing water is also very good for our souls, our spirits, our hearts, like all of this. So I'm creating these pieces with a bit of an inquiry, really, sensing if people can drop a little bit and pay attention to nature and to these amazing sounds and melodies that are surrounding us all the time. Yeah, that's like at the core of it. And I've interwoven this with maybe more like street songs, or the kind of songs that don't really belong anywhere and kind of belong everywhere, and that also are very connected with reclaiming and protecting Mother Earth.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well done, and very courageous of you to do so. It reminded me. I know you probably laugh at this, but on Radio 4, which I do listen to occasionally, they'll sometimes have a random sound that somebody's recorded, and it could be like, I don't know, an otter jumping into the water, or it could be an engine starting. You know what I mean? All kinds of random things, and it just suddenly took me back to that moment that the BBC Radio 4 do so well. I think I'm going to speak to my producer and see whether we can get some of your sounds brought into to more shows, because it was really, really, truly magical. Thank you. Tell me about tell us a little bit more about your Caribbean live performance. What can people expect when they come to a I don't know what you call it, a show, a performance, but what is it? You tell us.
Both. Yeah. So now that I've made the production and I've released it online, people can listen to it from the comfort of their homes. And I'm also in the process of maybe doing a little tour. I did the first date in London at the end of May, and I'm doing the second show in Stroud, where I live in Gloucestershire, on the 28th of September, on the Sunday, 5 p.m. at the Chapels of Rest. So anybody locally is very, very welcome to attend. And it's the idea of listening collectively to a story, maybe in a way that it was done and is still being done around a fire, for example. There is something about actually dropping from the visual consumption. I was thinking about that when you were mentioning consumption earlier. It's like actually not just the things we buy, it's also what we consume through our phones and our computers. And how much of that really invades our imagination or capacity to think or to create. It really colonizes our minds in some ways. And so I guess what I want to create with my show is an experience to really relax into the deep listening. And this is sandwiched between a like live play, improv theater, introduction, where I give a little bit of context of the piece, and I also invite people to kind of change from normal life into bringing a little bit of magic, a little bit of awe, a little bit of mystery. What is actually going on here? We don't quite know. This kind of like childish nature that is very close to me, that I'm wanting to share some of these gifts with the audience. And then at the end of the listening, I invite people to pair up and share what stayed on their heart. A lot of this production, another name that I was thinking about to use is For the Love of Corals. And you hear fishermen and the way they're just so utterly in love with corals and how it brings life to the reef. So obviously it's a very different context and very different life than people here in the UK and in Gloucestershire, like we're not really close to the sea, not in Stroud. So this enables a little bit of like integration, And then the very part, last part of the evening is a ritual. And that is the intention behind that is to call in our deepest care for the ocean. And in the way that I think, again, with consumption, a lot of it is passive behavior. I'm really curious about curating a flow whereby people are inviting to drop in, listen deeply, and then check in with themselves. Like, what is my intention? What is it that I can do in my life to care for the ocean? And remembering that every other breath you take, the oxygen is provided by microorganism from the ocean, right? So whether you want it or not, you are deeply connected.
Beautiful, absolutely beautiful. So, if you want to go and firstly fully immerse yourself in these wonderful sounds that Louise is creating, it's a sound journey to the Caribbean, then you can go to tuneintotheworld.com and there's more information. I'm looking at it as we speak. There's more information and there's a booking and everything else. So if you feel drawn to Stroud, you live in Stroud or Gloucestershire, you're going to be in the area September the 28th, do go and check it out. You can listen to the soundscape online as well. So there is a link to Spotify, SoundCloud, and Apple. So, if you can't make it in person, do go and support Louise, and just immerse yourself in those sounds. There's two things I would like to share with you. We've got about 10 minutes, and I definitely want to get your second piece of music in. So we'll do that in a second. But there's two things I want to share with you. I mean, it's very clear that you are deeply connected to the past, but with a really intuitive nature for the future. So I really want to honor you for that. Secondly, for bringing your heart and creativity to this evolutionary time that we're living in. So I really want to honor you for that. I am absolutely categorically clear that as the world has begun to be taken over by robots and AI, which is, I think, will be amazing if we get it right. Many, many of us are going to have a lot more time on our hands. And when that time comes about, what are we going to do? I'm hoping that people will begin to actually, reintegrate their lives into meditation and yoga and immersive sound and community and partying and, in a wholesome, dare I say it, in a heavenly way or a hedonistic way, in a beautiful way, where we can connect with that. So that I think you're a visionary, and I think you're actually beginning to create the experiences that people are going to very much want in the foreseeable future. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
Not at all. Do you have a response to that? Because I feel you do. I feel you see something that many of us might not be seeing, and maybe you could share your prophecy.
Yeah, it feels quite vulnerable to share that. So thanks for seeing me with that. I often feel like I am beyond this time. Like the ideas that I'm creating are, it's like a lot of people don't seem quite ready for it yet. And yet there is something like I'm not necessarily interested to just speak to the elite or just speak to people that have lots of time on their hands. It's like, how do we reach the working class? How do we reach people who are like back to back in jobs? And like it nature shouldn't be just for people who can afford it.
No, absolutely.
No way, right? So and I think there is something about staying connected with the realities of these people. I'm middle class. I grew up with my parents were working class, but I'm quite highly educated and all of that. So I guess that's why I want to do these in-person events is just like bring in people to share and collectively dream together. But you can only do that if you start from a common place. So what does that look like? And the thing with sound, the reason why I'm so adamant about it is because it feels very accessible. It feels very free for, all the people who can hear. Yes, there is an accessibility dimension. I understand that, but you don't need a lot of resources to listen, really.
I agree, and I think if anything, sound is incredibly healing. Of course, it can be massively damaging, but it actually cuts through or bypasses the mind. You can't really listen with your mind. you listen with your hearing stations, and many people believe it's just your ears, but actually the skin, every pore on your body, every hair, every follicle is listening to the vibration. So thank you for that. Really beautiful. I'm with you. I consider me as part of your tribe, and I think everybody that's listening will equally feel part of your tribe. So this is definitely an audience that I think you will absolutely resonate with, to excuse the pun. Let's play your
I
let's
can,
play.
if I may just add one more thing,
Please, please do.
so as a young artist, I've started a Patreon page, which is a membership support for people to come in and support my work and my vision into the world. And it's a new thing, so I would really welcome people to come on board. It's patreon.com/circleofvoices. And the reason why I'm mentioning that is because there are different membership systems which actually will push me to keep creating and to keep imagining. So you will become part of my accountable tribe, the tribe that keeps me accountable and that keeps me on my toes in terms of creating beautiful things. So I'm
That's
adding that
wonderful.
in.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. So, for those of you that would like to support Louise and her beautiful, wonderful work, Patreon is patreon.com, and it's Circle of Voices, which is Louise's specific page. So, if you're feeling inspired and drawn, go and support her. Be part of the tribe, and together we can hopefully make some huge differences in the world. Tell us about the next song you're going to play, or you've chosen to play. Do tell us why you've chosen it, because I'm not sure we're going to be able to get some any time at the end, because it might just play and play out. So, what song have you chosen? Why have you chosen it, and what does it mean to you?
I've chosen a song by Loki, which is Long Live Palestine. I think with the ongoing genocide and the starvation of Palestinian people, it is our minimal duty to be vocal about what's happening and to keep the awareness in places of pain and great despair. So there are many songs that have been made around that movement. You know, the occupation has been going on for close to 80 years now, so this is nothing new. But the level of violence is very intense, and it is still going on. And so I wanted to bring that song and also share that there is a global flotilla happening at the moment, which is the global swimming flotilla. And even from the comfort of your home, you know, you can follow and you can support. There are incredible protests happening around the world, and in the UK, in London, there were really brave souls taking the lawn of Parliament. And so there is something about staying alive with the pain of the world and not actually shying away. If you are able to take it, celebrate your grief and celebrate the anger and all the difficult emotions that may come. And I think artists and cultural workers have a great responsibility to stay bright messengers through it all. So that's why I wanted to bring that song. And yeah, Free Palestine.
Brilliant. Thank you very, very much. So I've had a really thoroughly enjoyed this show. It's been great. You've been a wonderful guest. Thank you so much. We are going to hear your song. And for those of you out there that are feeling moved and touched, do connect with Louise, Circles of Voices. Don't forget, it's important work that you're doing. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And here is Free Palestine.